Okay. So, Mary.
Yes.
This is the 20th of November, 2015. We are in the Sycamore Court first floor lounge, and I'm with Mary, your last
Harvey.
Name? Mary Harvey, and we're about to commence an oral heritage recording for Perry Common and me. Are you happy for this? For us to
yes.
go ahead with this
yes.
recording
yes.
and visual recording?
Yes.
It will be for the archives and
yes.
the local
yes.
history project,
yes.
and it's not for any commercial purposes.
Mm.
Once we've collated everything,
yes.
we will also transcribe it, and we will let you have a look at it
mm.
or hear it, and if there's
yes.
anything you think. Actually, I don't want that to be, I want that edited out, or in fact, you might, maybe you want to add something,
yes.
you'll be given that opportunity before it ever is
mm.
actually released into the, sort of the archives,
yeah.
And I believe the Library of Birmingham will be a storage place,
yes.
and also Woodside Lodge community will have, you know, storage,
yeah.
so obviously this is for prosperity. Is it prosperity, posterity,
yeah.
and generations to come to learn mm-hmm. from your wisdom.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yes, well, put a good word in for me while you're down there, will you, please?
A good word? What do you mean? What do you mean?
You're on your knees.
Ah, but of course, I'm with Dame Mary Harvey. I'm often very... I get into a lot of trouble sometimes.
Do you?
In the sense that... I ask questions,
yes.
irrespective of what the rules say.
Oh, yeah.
So I will tend to ask a question, or try and push your boundaries about something,
yes.
because I think it's right.
Yes, but if people don't want to tell
yeah.
you, they don't have to.
Exactly.
Mm.
And, but I don't mean in these recordings, I just mean generally.
Yeah.
And, and so, because of that, sometimes it's naivety, it feels like I'm trying to make trouble. I think it's received as that.
But oh, yeah.
actually, it's a question I'm asking.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like months later, they end up doing the thing that I've actually, I mean.
In other words, you open your mouth before you engage your brain.
No, the brain is always engaged.
Yes.
Because at my age now, I would think long, many times before I... But the point is, it's happened with Jesus Christ.
Oh,
he was
yes.
helping people
yes.
and they crucified him.
Yes.
So we wouldn't
yep.
say he was not thinking, was
no,
he?
No, no.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just that I think that's how life is sometimes.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well,
I take life as whatever it hands out to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You don't look like the sort, Mary, that will simply let anything go.
Oh, no.
If you see something that
yes.
you feel needs...
Yeah.
You would speak about it.
Yeah.
You would speak up, won't you?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And have you got into trouble for it?
No, never.
Never?
Never. No.
Really?
No.
Why would you say that is?
Because I got a gift of the gab and I smooth over it.
Oh! So, if David Cameron walked in now...
Yes.
Would there be things you'd want to ask?
No, I would say, I would say thank you for my award.
Oh, you got an award?
Yes, and a private letter signed David.
From David?
Yes.
Was it signed David?
Yes, it was signed David.
What did it mean?
And I was the 10th one in the United Kingdom to get it.
What was the award?
For volunteering and all sorts of things. I've got a list as long as you're on for volunteering.
Oh, really?
Yes. In time.
So who puts you, how does it work?
Well, the award from Mr. Cameron, I think it came through the office, or through Linda. He must have wrote to them and asked if there was anyone that fitted the bill. It was something that one of the prime ministers, the presidents of America started, Mr. Bush. And it was so successful, he contacted Cameron.
And said,
and he started his own.
And he said, get hold of Mary.
Well, the office must have said, get hold of Mary. Because I went in this one morning, to sign some checks, presumably. And They said, oh, there's been a phone call for you, Mary. From London, there's the number. I think you better take it from here, because London phone calls are expensive during the day. So I went in the small meeting room, and when they said it was the Home Office, I nearly died. I thought, what have I been up to? And they said...
When did you get this?
That came through the post.
He didn't come down and shake your hand?
No.
Why?
I've had a private letter from him.
All right, and did he spell your name right?
And a lovely Christmas card last Christmas.
What, really?
Yes.
Busy man.
Yes. I think they were all printed and signed and went through the system that way.
And are you happy with his handling of things?
Oh, yes, I am. Sometimes the cuts to the police don't seem right to me.
Yeah, not just the police. What about
the parish lot?
Well, there's a lot of cuts.
Yes.
I mean, recently, even the libraries, 2 days have been cut from the libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in sheltered housing.
Oh, yes.
2 years ago. And there were people your age there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And younger, 70, 80, 90. And the staff, there weren't... It was independent living, but you had people like Laura downstairs.
Yes.
And they would take it upon themselves to go in, because some of the people didn't have people visiting them. So they were the ones that went in and just, how are you doing, and chat.
Yes.
You know, help them with their laundry, a cup of tea, things like that. And they did that assiduously beyond the call of duty.
Yes.
And then they were cut.
They were removed
from that place.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's no one there for those people.
No.
So I saw those cuts, like, I couldn't believe it. You know, this is not something I read in the paper. This is something I saw for myself.
Mm-hmm.
The libraries, there's been cut, the main library that they spent millions on.
Yeah.
40 out of 70 hours were cut.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know, so I find it...
Well, the library itself, downstairs, where the rep and that is, they're very, very busy. They are.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but they're very busy. It's particularly on a Saturday night.
Yes. That's where I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm not. I think that we should do as a country more to stop selling arms, things like that.
Yes.
Because I feel
we should have more police and more. Well, I don't believe in armed police, but what is going on in the world now? Well,
exactly.
Because I think police can become gun happy. They can.
Yeah.
They are in America.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
I can't deny that.
Yes.
But not only are they in America.
Oh no! A lot.
It's so easy to get guns.
Mm.
So it's a cycle. You see.
Yes. Yes.
And the people who make money from guns.
Yeah, they don't care where they go as long as they get me money.
Exactly.
Yeah, they don't care where they go as long as they get me money.
So exactly. So I don't.
So we have to really blame them first for supplying.
Well, for what?
For supplying guns to people.
Well, exactly.
Mm.
You know, but don't forget, some of these people. See, our lovely David, and most of the politicians went to school with the people who make.
Yes.
Money from some of these things.
Oh, yes.
So, do you see what I mean?
A lot of big names are in it. And,
oh, yeah, this is my issue, you see.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is all...
Yes.
let's get on.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's very good. Ah, that's good. I haven't used this lens before. Great. Okay, Mary, we're going to start. And, oh, Lord... I'm making noises like my dad used to make when I bent down. I remember him making those noises.
Me back.
I used to think that you're old. And I catch myself doing things that my dad used to do. Do you know what I mean? I go, my dad used to make that noise. Okay, Mary.
Yeah.
May we start, please, with just a little bit about how you met I know you have to repeat now, but if I could just, especially if you come to dates, if you can remember those dates, that's fantastic, because then our listeners can get a picture of when. And I'm not going to be interrupting, but if you run out, so if you go, you know, then I'll start with Dennis then. Sorry? Start with that, and how you came.
Yes.
How you got to Perry Common, your earliest memories of Perry Common, and then I'll shoot on to your first recollection of the, you know, the houses coming down, so on and so forth. Thank you.
My name is Mary Harvey. I wasn't born in Birmingham, but I love Birmingham. I was born in Blyth, Northumberland. I met my husband in the local ballroom on July the 24th, 1941. He went away for 18 months, he came back. But in the meantime, his mother wrote to me and said, her son had wrote about me, when was I coming down to meet them? So I came down in the July, this was November, but I came down in July 1942. And if I'd had to choose my in-laws, I couldn't have chose better. I had wonderful in-laws, I did. They made me feel welcome from the very first meeting of them. I came down for the Christmas in 42, and who should walk in but Dennis, after 18 months. We got married, and then within 2 months, he went away to the Far East for a further 18 months. Never mind, we were still married, we celebrated our golden wedding, and I came down permanently in 1945, after the war was finished, down to Birmingham from Northumberland. And we couldn't get a house. So we lived with my in-laws. And as I've said before, they were absolutely wonderful to me. Eventually we got a flat, Gravelly Hill, just out of the town. Then we came back because we lost his father. And we've been in Bromhill Road ever since. At the start of the demolition of the estate, well, everybody was in shock. They were. We had a number of residents' meetings, and a lot was said in anger. And then we had 2 weeks before Christmas, we had a letter. We're going to pull your house down. Just like that. No more, no less. We're going to pull your house down. They couldn't build because the government wouldn't let them build council houses. So they let our association have the land. And we sold some of the land to private builders and we built our own. The first lot that left was Abingdon Road. Then we had about 6 camp houses. Now, a camp house was a house that eventually had to come down, but wasn't so bad as some of the other. And people moved in there. But if you moved out of the estate, you couldn't come back. And a lot of people didn't want to come back till they saw what the estate was appearing to be from the very first. That was in Abingdon Road. They were the first houses to build. And people were very angry at these residents. I had my own say about the council house. If a house wasn't fit to live in, you didn't pay council tax, which was a lot of money then. But they all said that, it doesn't work that way. So we still had to pay. It wasn't council tax, it was something else. And you paid for every adult in the house. But we watched the estate rise again. Phoenix Rise was the first lot done, and they were well named. As Phoenix rose up out of the ashes, so did those bungalows rose up out of the tumble-down houses that was already there. And it's lovely in Phoenix Rise, it is. They're all very proud of their gardens, and they do them. That's more than what some tenants do that are living in houses. What else can I say? We waited nearly 10 years before we moved from Bromhill Road down into Leonard Grove. And my husband was a keen gardener. So keen, he used to keep the older people in Perry Common in fresh vegetables. He would grow excessive. And the garden where we were was a lot smaller then. But never mind, we had to leave one greenhouse in the garden. We just couldn't transport it. But I've got a 6x8, which I inherited from my husband when I lost him. We were married nearly 60 years before he died. We had a long, happy marriage.
Wonderful. In Perry Common.
In Perry Common. And I love Perry Common.
What is it that you love about Perry Common?
I just love the area. And I've watched it expand and expand, grow bigger, grow nicer to live in. It was nice before. The camaraderie in the neighbours was very good. They used to save up from Christmas till about July to have a coach trip out to a seaside place, Western, or it was mostly rural, which is not a very nice place now, rural isn't. But Western is quite nice. And then they used to have whist drives in a different house every week. But of course, that's all stopped. As the people that first came in my in-laws came in May the 6th, 1926, during the big strike. They did. I don't suppose you can remember that.
What year?
1926.
No.
No.
What happened then?
There was a big strike. The whole of the country was on strike. Everybody was on strike. There was no buses, trains, or anything. No milkman or anything. There wasn't.
Well, that you were still in Northumberland then?
No, I was down in... still in Northumberland then, yes. I didn't come down to 1945.
Yeah, yeah.
I hadn't even met my husband then.
41.
Yeah. And, you know, I never understand why a young man of 19 would go in the middle... that lived in the middle of the country, went into the Navy. After all, you couldn't get warships up the canal, could you?
I know. I'm just adjusting.
Yes, and then he did his basic training and volunteered for submarines then. And there is a book out about his last submarine. It took me a long time to get it. In the end, I went into the library and asked if they'd got a copy. And they said, no, but I know where there is a copy. I said, oh, could you borrow it for me? So I borrowed it, and I wouldn't let my husband read it because he wouldn't talk about his war service. And I slunk things at him, particularly a story about an Australian in New Zealand. They were dropping them ashore in the Far East. And the water was so clear, you could see the submarine from up above if a plane was passing. And the Australian... backed out in the last minute. He says, I'm not going. So they thumped him. He was unconscious, and they went and dumped him. And they left them there for 4 days. Then they went back for them. It's all in this book. So I took it back, and then I asked if they could borrow it again. They said, why do you want to buy this book? And I said it was my husband's last submarine. There was pictures of when they were rammed by a Japanese cruiser. They're all in there. And they said, oh, is there a picture of him in it? I said, yes. I said, if it ever comes up for sale, could you get it for me? And I had a phone call. You know your book, The Hunting Submarine? I said, yes. She says, I've got it here for you. They told me to put a letter in saying if it ever come up for sale, why I wanted it. So I got it 2 days before our golden wedding, and I wrapped it in gold paper and gave it to him.
Have you got it now?
Yes. Well, I have it. My son's got it. My great-grandson borrowed it, and his granddad had the book back, but it's never come back to me. I know where it is, though.
It might be. Yeah.
I know where it is.
What's it called again?
The Hunting Submarine.
Mm-hmm. So, Mary, that's fascinating. Could we just go back a little to the... A little bit, you've spoken about the houses.
Yes.
And so when was the first inkling? I just want a little bit more about the process.
How the process came about.
What your involvement was that? Was it, you know, when did you first hear about this?
Oh, we heard rumors a couple of years before it started to happen.
What year was that?
I'm trying to think. We moved 98, 80, 80 something. About 84, I think. Rumors started flying. They were going to pull the estate down, but nothing sort of happened. So, you know, sort of it went over the top of your head. We moved in 1998 to where we are now. And it's the best move we ever made. It is.
What was it like then, the move, when you first came?
The houses were quite decent then. It was in later years that the start, they were built with breeze blocks and metal frames in the middle, and the metal frames were beginning to corrode and rust and everything else. Damp, the houses were getting damp and everything. But when they were first put up, my in-laws moved in 1926, but the first houses was in 1924, and that was Witten Lodge Road, it was. And they lasted some time, I think longer than a lot of them were. But, of course, as I said, the government said you can't build any more council houses. That's it. And, of course, the government hadn't got it. The council hadn't got any money to build private or anything like that. So they got round it that way.
And so what road did you live in again?
I was living here, yes.
What road?
Broomhill Road, number 28. And 28 Broomhill is still there now. It's a different 28 to what I knew. But it's a private house, a privately bought house now.
And, okay, so the rumours were flying.
Yes.
Did you have any problems with your particular house?
Yes, there was a big crack on the side. We were on the end of a block of four, and there was a big crack down the one side. Right, we had it painted when we bought it. We had it painted with this special outdoor paint, but you could still see the cracks. And the front bedroom was on the damp side. It was. I suppose it was just the rain, everything oozing through the rough casting and that.
So after the rumours, when did it begin to concretise that this was really...
I don't know whether it was late 89 or at the beginning of the next year that the rumours started to fly thick and fast. Oh, yes, a councillor told me, and this and that and the other. There's always things like that happening. And rumours fly right, left and centre, they do. But we moved, but we had a long wait. We had to. Our road was one of the last to be pulled down, it was. And we moved in 98, down to Lynnard Grove.
And what, were you involved in any of the meetings?
No, just the residence meeting. I wasn't involved in making judgments or anything then. I wasn't. It wasn't until after I lost my husband that I got involved.
And what was those meetings like? Can you remember?
Very angry. People were very angry. They were all shouting together, and half the time you didn't get any sense out of anyone. And
what sort of things were people saying?
They should have been pulled down years ago, and they should have been repaired, but they were beyond being repaired. They were going to cost more to repair than they were pulling them down and rebuild, it was. And then I don't know whether it would have been satisfactory or not. But the only ones that remained on the estate were the brick houses, and they were mostly on the corners. And part of Witten Lodge Road, there was only a few houses that got to come down there that were these breeze blocks. And, of course, they've all been built up now. And
so those initial meetings, they were with who? With Birmingham Council?
Yes, with Birmingham City Council and councillors. And
it was to inform them that they had to just decision to pull them down.
Yes. Yeah.
So when did it graduate to sort of what are we going to actually do about this situation?
Well, the meetings were too big. It was the whole of the state and they were too big. So they split it into four different sections, north, south, east and west. And then we had all our own problems in one contained area they had then.
But you weren't involved in any of
them? No, I wasn't involved then.
Did you, as a resident, did you hear and what was your feeling of how progress was being made?
Well, of course, you talked to everybody that lived in the road, how they all felt and everything. And our road was pretty empty by the time we moved. It was. But we stuck it out. We were burgled three times. And people knew, must have known we went out dancing on a Saturday night. And so they were quite easy to get into. They were.
And what was the... can you tell me a little bit about them? So obviously there must have been demolitions going on.
Oh, yes. There was demolitions going on in our road while we were living there.
And what was that like?
Hell. One word for it, sheer hell it was. You were afraid to go out and leave your property. And of course, by that time, we'd sold our house back to the council. We had to, because we couldn't sell it on the market. Nobody would buy it on the market. So that's how it was.
So you sold the house?
Yes, back to the council. No, before we moved out, and of course we had to start paying rent to the council then. We did, so.
Okay, can you describe the process towards getting your own house? Could you choose it? Did they just say, this is your house?
Yes and no. I'd been down, it was just down the road. The second half of Abingdon Road was a long, long road. And they split it into from Buxton Road. And it's a cul-de-sac now of 16 houses. So, but there's a number 17 because there's no number 13. There isn't. And I went down there. I couldn't see into the houses or anything, just sort of over the builder's boards. And I thought, oh, this looks lovely down here. Then one day my husband said, let's go down Brumhill Road and have a look at the properties down there. Well, I knew what I was doing because the only properties that were ready for letting then, the gardens were high like that with soil. You couldn't see the houses for soil in the garden. I thought, right, you come and have a look. I'm not coming to live here. He didn't want to leave Brumhill. He didn't want to leave Brumhill Road. He didn't. But it wouldn't have been the house we were actually living in. It was further down the hill. I says, Dennis, this was because we were walking towards these houses. Remember, we're not getting any younger, and this is a hill. All right, we're going to have a look. I'm not coming here. He saw the state of the gardens, that garden, and knew what I was doing. He says, let's have a look at that wee grove, as you call it, down there. He says, oh, he says, I like this. I like this house. It's got its own private drive. Otherwise, they're shared drives. He says, I like this house. I says, yes, so do I. We could only sort of look through the windows, but you couldn't get a real good look. So I had words with Ian Rathband. He was our housing officer at the time. I don't know if you ever heard or met him. I said, there's a house down Abingdon Road. He says, what, in that wee grove you talk about? I said, yes, please. That's a bit of the North Country coming back out in me. And, he says, yes, I'll put you down for a house there. I said, good. So he put us down, and I had a phone call on the Monday morning. Mary, I've got a house for you to see. Oh, yeah. So meet me at 1 o'clock. I says, I'll meet you now if you want. He says, I want some lunch. So when we went down, we met them there, and it was the house that we wanted. Hallelujah, we got it. And Dennis couldn't believe his luck that he got the house, the drive that we sort of wanted. Right, Linda's got her own drive, but we're the only ones that have got our own drive. The rest are shared drives. You know, two houses and a shared drive. But we got the house we wanted. Right, the garden wasn't as big as my husband would have liked. I said, look, you're getting older. I said, you can't take your big cedar wood greenhouse, there wouldn't be room, but you can take your 8x6. So my son took it down, laid the foundations where it is now, and of course I've inherited it now, and I keep it going. I do. But we got the house we wanted.
And what did you buy that house?
Pardon?
Did you buy it?
No, we're not allowed to buy them. No. You can't buy the association properties. You can't. It doesn't matter what association you belong to, you can't buy the houses. There was houses for sale, but we couldn't afford to buy one by that time. He was, getting on in years by then. He'd been retired quite a long time, that time.
So what was the road like? What were the first few years of moving in? What was that like? What was the relationship with the housing association? How was everything with the house?
Well,
was the house up to standard? Did you?
Oh, yes. We liked the house. As soon as we saw it, I got my own dining room, which we hadn't in our old house. We hadn't. And I always wanted a dining room of my own. And I got it.
And can you describe anything more about the house?
It was lovely. It was modern. The only thing I've got against it is the kitchen. It's small. You can't get more than two people in at a time. But that has been brought forward as board meetings and residence meetings about the kitchens being small. In the two-bedroomed houses, you have a kitchen come dining room all in one. And there's more room there. But I like my dining room. And I make full use of it.
Would you say that 10 years down, it was phase 3, phase 4, would you know? Which phase 2?
Abingdon Road was 1. And then down the hill was 2nd. I think we've been 3rd or 4th lot to come down. I know we were nearing the end of it.
So does that mean that the other houses had small kitchens as well?
Oh, yes. Yes, it's been brought forward at residence meetings about the kitchens being small.
I heard that the residents had quite a lot of input into...
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, there was plans shown. You could go and visit them at the hall or in the town hall if you wanted. You could see the plans of the whole estate. And where only two houses had got to come down in a road of a main road, the little bungalows at the back of them, like Phoenix Rise, there's only a small entrance there, and that was only the two houses that came down. So the gardens behind them must have been rather big. They were. And, of course, Hastings Road came down. And there's only about 4 houses in Hastings Road now by the school. There is. Yeah. There's only about 4 houses now. And they're new. And then you turn the corner into Waycroft, and there's new houses there as well. But there's 2 on the corner, there's 2 old properties. They must be made of brick.
Okay, and so we're 10 years further on. Mm-hmm. You've gone through the hell, as you put it, of the demolition, presumably just because it was an eyesore.
Yes, it was an eyesore.
And people were stealing things, I hear.
Oh, yes. And they're still stealing. There's a house in Perry Common, and when a police car pulled up in front of their house, they were down the garden and over into the gardens in Leonard Grove, or into the grove itself, climbing over the fence. but they've all had burglar-proof paint on top of their fences now. You can't get it off your hands. One morning, I looked out the bedroom window at 8 o'clock in the morning, and what the hell is that police car doing there? And there was a couple of PCSOs outside my house and one in the drive opposite. So I rang Linda. I said, what's going on outside, Linda? She said, I think there's trouble in Perrycum on the road, this house. And one of the police cars went round and they must have gone into Perrycum Road. The next thing you know, these two boys were over the fencing, straight into the arms of the police. Police car pulled up, out they come, straight into the policeman's arms. They chucked them into the van. And that was it.
So that was during the demolition times?
Yes. Well, of course, we were built up by that time. But Dovedale Road and that, they weren't built up. They are now, and they're lovely. Once again, it's a mix of privately bought and housing associations. As you know, we've got 20 properties there. And they're lovely houses.
And what would you say if you were to explain to a complete stranger to Birmingham or visitor from overseas? How would you describe the story of Perrycum, given that you spent 60 years here?
A miracle. A miracle has happened in Perrycum. It has. 90% of the houses are new. There's still a lot of old council houses left. But it is a miracle, a wonderful miracle it is. It is a changed neighbourhood now. There's all sorts of things going on. We have a lovely new community hall, which is also an office for the association. There's all sorts of things going on in there. And you can go in at any time in the hall and ask for information, sort out a problem. There's always someone there that's an expert in whatever you are going to ask for. And everybody is made welcome. Everybody. In fact, if you have to wait a little time to see someone, they say, would you like a cup of tea or a cup of coffee?
Wonderful. Yeah. A miracle and welcome.
It is, yes.
Now, that I find it very interesting. Obviously, I'm an outsider, and I find it interesting that you were not that involved in the early stages of the formation of the
Just looking at plans.
You were looking at plans. You were a resident.
Yes.
You were living your life with your husband.
Yes.
And now you're in the absolute thick of the... Can you describe that for us, please?
Well, one morning, I was coming out because I wanted something to do, get out of the house. And Linda Hines was coming towards me. And she stopped, says, how are you, Mary? I said, oh, I'm fine, you know, just got to get on with life. Well, she said, why don't you come and join our community watch? We've just started a community watch, men. I'm going back 10 years now. And she said, I said, what's community watch? I've never heard anything about it. Well, she says, we're out tonight. Why don't you come and join us outside the post office on the ring? And if it's not for you, you don't have to come again. We have policemen with us, but they're off-duty police, and we have to pay them. But come and have a try. So I haven't hovered all afternoon. Should I try? Go on, Mary. It was just over 12 months after I lost my husband. So I went round, and I quite enjoyed it, except I couldn't come back to Sycamore Court. We used to come to Sycamore Court and have a cup of tea and a gossip about what had happened that evening. But I said I wasn't ready for that yet. I wasn't ready to mix with outsiders. I know it was rather silly of me. But two policemen followed me home and they stood on the corner of the Grove till I got inside, which I thought was very nice of them. So the next time we went out, Linda said, are you coming back out again? I said, yes, I am. I'm not going to tell you what happened that first night. It was something the policeman said to me. And since then, I've been a member of the Community Watch. And then Linda said, we're looking for new directors for the board. I said, oh, I'm too old. You're never too old for anything. She said, come, we're having a meeting on Wednesday. Come and see. I said, I'm not educated enough for that. She said, just come and see. So the next thing you know, I was on the board as a director. And I've been there ever since. Plus an awful lot of volunteering about that, Lynn. I do Duckling Watch. If you don't know what Duckling Watch is, we have this beautiful park called, it's on Perry Common Road, and it is, it's Whitton Lakes, it's its proper name. I said, so we, Linda once again, Linda started this, we go out about twice a week, nobody knows what time, what day, unless you come out with us, and or have applied to come out with us. We have orange jackets with a duck on the back with a pair of binoculars. We don't do normal. We don't do normal at all. And that's been going for about 5 years now. And it's no good a councillor or a member of parliament saying, oh, I'll have to come out with you one day. We'll make it out there and then, so they can't get out of it. And we took Jack Dromey out, and he's never forgot me since. he always greets me with a hug when I see him. And, oh, we've had all the councillors out. We had Simons or Simones before Jack Dromey came on board. We had him out as well. He said he would like to come. He was no good saying he'd like to come. You're coming. And that's it. We've had them out on Community Watch as well as Duckling Watch. With Linda, we take the junior wardens out from the church. They can't become a junior warden unless the schools recommend them. They're children that's not quite mixing with other children. And we take them out pond dipping. The first time we took them out pond dipping, it was pouring down with rain. And as soon as they saw the equipment, that was it. They forgot about the rain. And we had this, the equipment was quite expensive at first, but now we've got it permanently. And they love to do it. They've got nets that drag the bottom of the lake. They've got trays to pour it into. And they've got books telling them what they've pulled up from the bottom of the lake. And the very first time, one little girl shouts, I've got a fish, I've got a fish. It was only about an inch long, but she'd got a fish. She had. So we took a photograph of her with her fish. We take photographs of everything we do. And then the orchard came along. It was literally a dump, it was. There was old boats, because they used to have boating on the lake, that you can hire the boat, little rowing boats and whatnot. There was also a cafe down there when my husband first took me down onto the little lakes. But, of course, it was a wooden hood, but a cafe that opened sort of Sundays, Saturdays and Sundays and school holidays, etc. And, of course, that all fell to pieces. But it was all dumped in this walled area, it was. And there was two big huts in there. So we won this competition the Birmingham City Council put out. So we started the velvet, it came from velvet tissue. You know about velvet tissues. The toilet tissues, you know, they pick up a tree and the plant three. You've seen the adverts. And we got it all cleared out. And now it is absolutely beautiful. It's been going about 5 years now. And mostly volunteers. We have no paid staff. The only paid staff is the park keeper. And he's got a hut there that he can make a cup of tea, a microwave. He can warm a meal through for himself. And since we had this new park keeper, it's absolutely magnificent, the parks are. A lot of people remark upon it. They do. They stop us on a duckling watch and they say the park's looking lovely now. We have events down there. We have an event coming up towards Christmas. It'll be about our sixth one we've had. The last one was in the summer. We had donkeys and the slides. The donkey man was supposed to go at 4:30. He was still there with the queue at 5:30. Linda said, he's coming from Wales. I hope he's not walking the donkeys all out Wales. Now, but that's Linda, that is. But that was, we must have had about 600 people come through that day. Mind, the weather was with us. In fact, every event we've had, the weather's been with us. The last one was Halloween. It was today. It was a beautiful day, it was. They had pumpkin and faces and all sorts of things, free refreshments and chocolate apples and toffee apples, and all made in front of their eyes. So they knew they were all fresh and what. The only thing is we had to buy our apples for the Halloween party because the craft session we had before that, we encouraged the children to pick an apple off the tree. Well, the result, we didn't have any left. We had to go and buy them for then. But it was a very good event. They've all been good.
That's a wonderful sort of summary of the types of things that the Woodton Lodge Community Association, which came out of a few residents, are coming together and now are, you know, doing their best to contribute to the, to the community.
Yes. We have quite a lot of volunteers.
And as a board, can you tell us something of your experience as a board member now? For someone who wasn't sure that they were going to,
I find it very interesting and actually very knowledgeable. I've learned a lot of things since I became a board member. I am allowed to speak my mind and no horrible comebacks or anything. You could speak your mind as a director. And we'll get involved in all sorts of things.
And what do you think of the... There's been a mix of ethnicity now and cultural background in Perry Common. Someone who's lived, obviously you've seen a lot of change. Can you tell us a little bit about the changes you've seen and the reaction to the change?
Well, the whole estate has changed, apart from the houses on the corners, which were brick, and they were left. But the changes for the better, it is. The new hall that we have is well and truly used. It's really used, it is. People that have put their houses up for sale took them back off the market. They didn't want to leave Perry Common. Not once it started reforming itself and people could see what was going to happen to the estate. They could go and have a look at the maps and see how their houses were going to be involved and everything else. We've got more park areas now than we had before. For all a lot of people have moaned about taking part of the recreation ground off for building, it is still leaving a large plot of land. There was a plot of land that was never used, just for people walking through. And druggies for throwing drugs around and whatnot. But it's still going to be a large piece of land, the recreation field is going to be, with some new houses. In fact, as you know, they've already started excavating to see if there's many old things. We've already found one years back, and that's in Birmingham Museum. It's a big round stone with a hole right through the middle. We reckon it was part of a mace or a hammer of some sort, way back in the days when the picks and the Scots were floating around.
Wonderful. Now, I'm very impressed by your consistent level of positivity, I would say.
Oh, thank you.
Because I've encountered, what's the best word? Lingering resentment, let's just say.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Well, you've painted a picture of positive change.
Yes. For the better.
For the better.
Yes.
Where people benefit from
these
changes.
Yes.
Are you able to shed light on, I'm not asking for names or anything like that, but why do these resentments exist, or where they're coming from, given that they still live in the community, enjoying some of, or have access to some of the benefits of the change?
Well, a lot of resentments come from the older council houses that have been left. Naturally, like everybody, the rent goes up yearly. But it always goes up that little bit more than Perry Common Associations does. A lot of people don't like the new buildings because there's more new buildings being put up that was taken down because they had huge gardens. We had a huge garden at Brumhill Road at the back. And we've got a garden now that I can cope with, and I still do all my own gardening. Unless on a Friday I'm a little bit idle and I get the lawnmower out, do about a metre, leave it, and then when my son comes down, he'll march through and finish it for me. I know it's a crafty little move on my part, but his wife knows what I'm doing, but he doesn't. But he's a good man. He is a very good man. He does. All through me having my bathroom changed, he's rang me up every night to except last Tuesday and Wednesday last week, and I was at a conference in Liverpool then.
Right. So
the estate has changed for the better. It has really changed for the better. It has.
So
I'll defy anybody to say otherwise. There's a lot more going on now. As you know, there's no industry in Perry Common. So you don't have clubs attached to industry and whatnot. We only have what we've made ourselves with the help of the staff of the Witten Association. It is. The staff are all hardworking. They are. They all are experts in their own little field. They are.
Well, I've certainly seen you there. You've been very modest, but I know you're on the reception. I know that you should.
Yes, I'm on reception two mornings a week. I always used to do Thursday till someone from Wilson Stewart School wanted to do it on a Thursday. So, of course, I was pushed out. But I've been asked to go back now. I like helping out on reception. And I go to as many meetings as available there. And yeah.
Well, Mary, we've done a good stretch.
Yeah.
And that was very good. We've kept it very good detail from someone who lived constantly here. So
yes,
I'm really
yes.
pleased about yes. that. I'll give you a break for a few weeks.
Yes.
Several weeks. And then we can come back to the stories about dancing.
Yes.
Just going into a bit more detail about the submarine. What Perry Common was like.
I'll ask my son if I can borrow his dad's book.
Yeah, I'll look out for it as well.
Yeah.
But also the war, how Perry Common was affected by the war. what people did.
Yes.
Just the war years.
Yes.
And, I mean, we'll do that another time.
Yes, my father-in-law was a fire officer, part-time. He did a full-time day job, and then was in the fire service. And one of my visits, my very first visit down to Birmingham, we were going to the Gorman and the Steelhouse Lane. I don't suppose you can remember that cinema. And my father-in-law was on standby duty. And I said, "Why is everybody saluting you?" They said, "Because I'm an officer and they've got to salute the uniform." I never thought he was so important. But he was in all the Coventry bombing. That was terrible. He was there for 2 days. And when he eventually got back to work, the boss wanted to take 2 days' pay off him. And he was a manager of a Ford depot. So he says, "If you're going to take 2 days' pay off me for helping my country, you can keep your so-and-so job."
Mm. And do you remember the Carlton cinema?
Carlton? Where was that?
In town?
No.
I heard a story about the Carlton cinema bomb hit some of it, but there were 19 people sitting in their seats without a mark on them.
Oh, I've never heard that.
Yeah, without a mark on them, their eyes still open, but the blast had killed them.
Oh, yeah. My friend, who was 112, she just died recently, she would know all about that. Because where Lewis's is now, there was an underground there, and there was a tobacconist in the middle of it. And she worked in the tobacconist during the war, but she didn't smoke. She also used to help out at M&B breweries at some of their events at Malvern and all the rest of it. And she didn't drink.
What were you doing during the war?
I worked in Northumberland. A job I couldn't have done in Birmingham.
Well, you moved down in 1941.
No, I came down in 1941. I didn't move down until 1945, permanently.
Oh, when the war finished.
Yeah. Do you want
you
to know?
Came back and then you went back.
To a visit. Then I came back for the Christmas again. That was when Dennis walked in on us.
Oh, walked in on you?
Yes. As far as we were concerned, you were still in the Middle East. But the doctor in Portsmouth on Christmas morning, 1941, and they said if anyone could get home and back for midnight Boxing Night, they could go home. Well, he knew he could. And the dog performed, it was Dennis's dog, he performed funny the whole of Christmas Day. And his mother got quite cross with the dog and threw him out in the garden. But never mind. We went down to Jerry's Lane. There was a fire station there. And my father-in-law played the piano beautifully. He took my sister-in-law and I, she was only 15, and I down to the Christmas party, the staff's Christmas party. And the staff were told to dance with Officer Harvey's guests. Well, I didn't like that. I prefer people asking me to dance because they wanted to dance with me. But never mind, we stuck it. And in the meantime, the knocker went. You didn't have bells them days. You had knockers on your door. And the dog would hardly let Mum get to the front door. She said, "The girls aren't coming back yet." So never mind, the knocker went again. And the dog was still performing. And he hardly let this person in the door. It was my husband. It wasn't my husband then.
The dog was performing.
Yes, he wouldn't let him in. He was so excited at seeing him. And that started at 8 o'clock in the morning that day. And when they said Mary's here, he couldn't believe it. I was here for the Christmas.
Wow.
He left at 1 o'clock on the Boxing Day at dinner time because he had to get back to Portsmouth. But the second time, when he went to the Far East, as far as we were concerned, he was still in the Far East. I would get a letter. I won't be writing for a little while. And then I knew he'd been to sea for a week then, and there was another fortnight before I sort of, you know, is he all right, isn't he all right, or whatnot. Then I would get a cable within 24 hours. Right, he'd already got to pick a number. He couldn't say what he wanted to say. He got to pick a number. It might just say, love you, always love you, or something like that. He just got to pick a number off the sheet, and they sent it. They did.
Was that because of the security?
Security, yes. Yes, I mean, my job was a secure job. I had to go into court and put my hand on the Bible in front of a judge and swore to secrecy. Now you just fill a form in.
Mm-hmm. Well, next time we'll go deeper into that.
Yeah. You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised what I worked at during the war.
What you were?
I used to have to go on board all the merchant navy boats that came into harbour to see they got proper medical supplies on board. I had to know what tide they were going out on to get my order back, what they were carrying, nationality, the number of the staff, where they were going.
Yes, you had you have got some interesting stories about that time, haven't you, Mary? Yes.
Actually, every boat I went on, they were most polite to me. And if I saw the steward, I would come back with a tin of fruit, cream to go with it, a couple of pounds of sugar, because it was all rationed. But if I saw the skipper, it was a coffee with the skipper. I wasn't really interested in that. But that's what I did during the war. I did it for 5 years. I did.
And do you have any old pictures,
Yes, I've still got my old harbour pass.
And do you have old pictures of Perry Common?
No, I have no, any old pictures of Perry Common, my sister-in-law had. And all I've got is a photograph of my father-in-law and my sister-in-law in uniform when she was young, 15. She was in some kind of Rangers, she was. And
do you remember who was leading the boys' brigade around the time that you were?
Oh no, I'll have a look. I think I've still got some old pieces of Dennis's boys' brigade. I'll go back home and I'll have a look, yeah, and bring you let you look at them.
Because I met a man, quite a short man. In one of the fairs, and I mislaid his number, and he said he was captain of the boys' brigade.
Oh, I might have that. I might have that name in the bits and pieces I've got.
Yeah,
I know exactly where they are.
What was your husband doing though? Like one of the people who organised it. He wasn't a boy.
Yes, he was a boy when he was in the boys' brigade. He was a boy. He went into the navy.
Well, when did he?
He went to the Navy at 18.
Oh, he wouldn't have been there when this man was there.
Oh. No, well, it disbanded. Because people were mourning about the marching round at 12 o'clock on a Sunday dinner time. Broke their sleep up.
Just sounds ridiculous. What were they doing in bed at 12 o'clock?
Yes, what were they doing in bed then?
On a Sunday. Well, Mary, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'm going to go and look at this, make that. This is, we've just finished Oral Heritage Recording with Mary Harvey on the 20th of November 2015 at Sycamore Court. So Mary, as I said before, we will, this is for archives purposes, and we'll make sure that we run all this by you before it's ever released into the Wootton Lodge Community Association sort of auspices. Mm-hmm. There was one thing that we didn't quite get, which I'd just like you to hold it, just to say your name and when you're I'm Mary Harvey and I was born in... That's all.
It's Mary Harvey. I was born in Blythe, Northumberland, the 29th of October, 1921.
Thank you very much, Mary. You're a star.